Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. A few days ago in Vrindavan, I made the point in a class that I was giving there. It's a point that I make from time to time, that some strange points in Christian dogma. Do you know what dogma means? It means a belief which is not well substantiated. It's propagated, but it's not well substantiated. It's something which people are supposed to believe without any basis. So I mentioned a couple of points. One was that, as we saw as we were driving from the airport on the back of one of the cars, Jesus died for you. So the idea that Jesus is God and that he died is practically atheism. God died. So that's very strange. And there are so many strange things. I gave another example that all the suffering of the human race since time immemorial is because someone a long time ago ate an apple. And it's also very strange. Of course, not that all Christians believe that literally, although previously they did before they became enlightened, so to speak. Although what are called fundamentalist Christians, they believe this. Although the basis of Christianity is that Jesus died on the cross for our sins, although as far as I'm told, it's not mentioned anywhere in the Bible. Anyway, as I was saying yesterday, we don't have to get too much into Christianity, but I just mentioned that it's rather strange. So at the end of the class, a written question was presented to me that, well, Adam eating an apple may seem strange, but then Brahma's coming out of the lotus, that also seems strange. It wasn't really a question, it was a comment which invited a response. So I replied to it that it's not really, I said it's like comparing apples and oranges, which is an English saying which means an imprecise analogy. As Srila Prabhupada sometimes pointed out, an analogy should have points in common with the point with the subject that it's supposed to be demonstrating. If you say, for instance, that birds have beaks, and therefore you shouldn't play football on Sundays, doesn't, what's the connection? Srila Prabhupada often quoted this in connection with Ghatakash Patakash. The Mayavadis, they give the example that air is within a pot. And if you smash the pot, the air merges with the mass of air. So in the same way, the jiva is in the kusha, or the covering of the material body, or of the material world. And when he gets liberated, he merges with the all-pervading spirit. As Srila Prabhupada pointed out, not only Srila Prabhupada, of course so many acharyas previous to him, that it's not a meaningful analogy. Because what's the similarity between the jiva and air in a pot? And for that matter, what's the similarity between the all-pervading spirit? It's not a very good analogy, for the air is not it's not a complete analogy for the Supreme Lord, who is all-pervading, but he's also localized. So anyway, I gave that example, that it's like comparing apples and oranges, that they're two different kinds of things altogether. I wanted to speak on that more, so I'll do that now. But it just so happened that I got an email today from the devotee who had written the question and said, actually, it was me who sent that question. So I'll send him this recording also and make it available for him. Now, I wanted to discuss this more. First of all, what do we mean by strange? Strange means something... Well, I guess we should get out... What does it say in the... Look in the dictionary. Look up strange. Or you can give me the computer. That's... Srila Prabhupada often did that, actually. Because defining terms, we should... If we're going to talk about something, then we should define the terms very clearly. So strange, it's a well-known word. Just like God is a well-known word, but no one knows what it means. So strange, okay. Not previously known, unfamiliar. Something which is unfamiliar is strange. Just like... You may go to some part of the world and see some fruit. If you never tasted durian, and you think that's a very strange fruit. If you tasted durian, they get everything in Dubai. And it's popular among Chinese people. In Thailand, in this season. And you know what durian is? It looks something like a jackfruit and it stinks like anything. They have outside the hotel signs, no durian allowed. It makes the whole... It looks similar to a jackfruit, outside and inside. And it tastes terrible, but people go crazy over it. Chinese people, they love it. And it's really hot. It makes you... Even though it comes in the summer. Anyway, if you... Sounds really strange, doesn't it? Well, there's an example of something strange. Durian, one kind of fruit. If you never saw a rambutan before, you might think that looks rather strange. You know what a rambutan is? They didn't get that here in India yet. They didn't grow it. It grows in Malaysia, Thailand, Philippines. Some kind of... looks something like a lychee. Doesn't taste nearly as good. But on the out, it's quite big, and on the outside it's got all these kind of red and blue hairs. There are all kinds of things. Keshav tua jagat vichitra. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, your jagat, your world is vichitra. What does vichitra mean? What's the usual English translation of that? Strange. Strange is the usual translation. It actually means, literally, what does it mean? It means, well, variegated, I guess it means. And maybe several. I could look that up too. Can mean wonderful, yeah. Chitra mean. Chitra bhav, that's said about Chaitanya. The word chitra is often used in Chaitanya Leela. Chitro shando tamo nudo. Wonderfully bestowing benediction on all. Okay, so strange means unfamiliar. Out of the ordinary. Unusual or striking. Differing from the normal. Not of... exotic. What's the meaning we're looking for? Archaic. Actually, they don't give in any of the definitions what we're looking for. But in the synonyms, peculiar, odd, queer, quaint, outlandish. What deviates from the usual or customary? So, alright. So, what deviates from the usual or customary? Well, we would expect God to be strange in the sense that he's not ordinary. And we would expect the universe to be, many things about the universe to be strange, because we can only perceive a very small part of it. So we can expect that the creation of the universe, it may seem rather strange, whichever way it is. The scientist theory, which also is similar to that of the Catholic Church, is creation ex nihilo. There was nothing and then there was everything. The only difference is the scientists say nothing came from nothing. And the Catholics say, well, there was nothing but God made everything. So the idea propagated in popular science books like A Brief History of Time? What's that called? Stephen Hawking's? What's that book? His famous book called? A Brief History of Time, isn't it? Yeah. It's one of the most popular books among staunchly faithful, young, scientifically minded Indians. You may have seen them reading it on the train when you go to distribute books on the train. So he presents the commonly popular scientific dogma, the most popular one among the several hundred theories about how everything came about, but the most popular one at the present time, at least what we're told, there may be a new one because scientific theories take time to infiltrate into the popular imagination. The theory is, well, there was nothing, and then all of a sudden there was an explosion. How did it happen? Well, it's rather strange. And then everything fell into place, and here we are sitting in Bangalore. It all came from nothing. Right? Scientific, right? So, if we try to imagine it, it seems rather strange. And if we try to imagine Lord Brahma being born from a lotus which grows out of the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, that also seems rather strange. So anyway, we can expect that whatever it is, it's going to seem rather strange, just like the frog in the well. When he was told about life beyond the well, he couldn't accept it because it was beyond the scope of his imagination to accept it. So what we can accept is that whatever is going on in the universe beyond us is beyond our present scope of experience. And therefore whatever it is, it's going to be strange compared to our day-to-day life in Bangalore or in Timbuktu, for that matter. You know where Timbuktu is? Never heard of Timbuktu? It's in the southwest of Africa. If you go there, there's probably a McDonald's, and it won't be that much different from Bangalore. The whole world, it's all the same. And I met someone in Dubai who wanted to climb Mount Everest, and I said, that's a stupid thing to do. It's fun. Thought it was a good idea. Why should people do that? Risk their lives? Anyway, I just think when you get to the top, there's probably a McDonald's hamburger stall on the top. They fly them in by helicopter. You can buy them for like $100 each or something. Probably. No need of a fridge up there. Anyway, our stereotype life in Bangalore or anywhere else, it may seem rather strange to people who are not familiar with that. Just like people come out of the villages in Tamil Nadu and they go to some school and then they come to Bangalore. And in the beginning, it's all very strange for them. And then they eventually get used to it and they think they're very advanced. But because it's new, it's unfamiliar. The unfamiliar seems strange because we become accustomed to thinking that Whatever environment we're in, we think that this is normal and everything is like that. Just like you, I often have the experience in the winter in India, and we're all wrapped up in warm clothes. You look up at the fan and you think, what is that for? Because for the last 2 months it's been so cold and you can't... But then, you know, 4 or 5 months later, it's on 24 hours a day. But just after 1 or 2 months of being in the cold, you can't even imagine that it could be hot enough for that. Although, you know, every year it's used, but you just get... It's the nature of material conditioning that we just get used to whatever's going on around us. It's just like if you get sick and you're laid up on a bed for a couple of weeks, and you just kind of you sort of think it's normal, and it becomes difficult to imagine being healthy and able to run and jump, because it just seems normal to be sick. And it works the other way too. If you're healthy, this is a problem in youth, that everyone's healthy and they can never imagine they'll be older and sick, and then they don't bother to care for the health of their bodies. Most of our devotees do this in their youth, including yours truly, mainly myself. And then when you get older, then you suffer for that. Because we can't imagine, in youth, we can't imagine that the body would ever come to a stage where it would be sick, although we see it all around us. Because in youth, you can go for a couple of days and nights without sleeping, and you can do all kinds of things, and the body just very quickly recovers. But then you pay for it later. So the point I'm making is that we tend to think whatever environment we're exposed to for some time, we think that's normal. And all of reality is like that. And therefore, when we hear descriptions of, for instance, Brahma being born from the lotus, which comes from the navel of Garbhodakshay Vishnu, we think it's very strange. But if we think intelligently, which isn't a very common thing, then we should understand that whatever is going on in the universe, beyond our very limited range of perception, it will seem, it's going to be strange, whatever it is. But the description in Shastra of Lord Brahma being born from the lotus, it upholds, it is logical, it is theistic, inasmuch as it upholds the principle of theism that there is the supreme controller under whose direction everything is coming into being. Yatova imani bhutani jayanti. Everything comes into being through him. Yena jatani jivanti. Everything is maintained by him. Maya dhakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetuna anena kauntaya jagadvi paribartate. The whole material creation is ordered by him. He is the ultimate source of everything. So it upholds the principle that there is an intelligent direction of a sensible person in charge of the universe. It upholds that principle. Whereas the other the popular strange theory that everything comes from nothing. There's an nothing explodes, and then it all falls into place by chance. That's also a strange description, but it doesn't really make any sense. It doesn't in any way correspond with anything that we have any. It's a theory, but it doesn't correspond with anything that can be considered scientific. The idea that everything, although they call it science, but the idea that everything can come into being simply by chance, all the order in the universe comes into being by chance. It's actually the most gross and hypocritical anomaly in the name of science. That order comes out of disorder. Actually, it contradicts the laws of science, because any system without control should tend toward chaos. So, the appearance of Brahma is strange, but it's an acceptable and strangeness. Whatever it is, how God creates the universe, that's not, it's going to be something definitely more complex and unusual to us. Unusual is a synonym of strange, than someone's a housewife making coffee. Now, they also make something, or make idlis or something like that. Even you may have seen, there was one movie, you probably didn't see it, there's so many movies, of devotees in Australia. Oh, actually it was a photograph, and at some festival, the devotees in Australia, they were cooking puris. And there was a regular, you know, Australian woman looking like amazed, because they'd never seen, they'd never imagined that you can put a flat piece of dough into hot oil and it will blow up like that. They'd never seen such a thing. They never imagined. And she was surprised. So to her it seemed very strange and wonderful. You could see from the photo, she was amazed. So we shouldn't think that God, he's creating the universe in such a drab or humdrum way. But there should be something wonderful about it. Otherwise, what's the fun in being God? So the question comes then, well, what about when I was criticizing the idea that all the suffering of humanity comes about because of Adam eating an apple? I also said that was strange. But that's strange in a different way. The strangeness that may seem to us strange, it only seems strange to us because we're tiny, limited beings. The strangeness of Brahma's appearance, that strangeness upholds the principles of theism, that there is God, and the first living being in the universe comes from him, and under his direction, Brahma organizes the universe. So it upholds the principle of theism. Whereas the idea that Adam ate an apple and therefore the whole human race is suffering, it transgresses the principles of theism. Actually, the idea is that because Adam was told not to eat that fruit, apparently in the Bible it just says a fruit and it's been called an apple. It's been supposed that it's an apple, but maybe it was a jackfruit, you never know. Or a lychee or whatever. Anyway, the idea is that he disobeyed the order of God. That's the idea. And that everyone in this world is suffering because of disobedience of the order of God. So that's all right. That's that we can accept as a theistic principle. But if we're to take it, we can accept as a theistic principle that everyone in the mature world is suffering because of disobedience of the order of God. That's acceptable. But if we take the description literally, that one person, they ate an apple, or whatever the fruit may have been, and because of that, there's an accident, we hear sound of scraping and screaming, and someone got run over by a truck. And then the truck driver, they take him to court and say, well, it wasn't my fault, it was Adam's fault. So was it Adam's fault? I've got a terrible toothache, you know, that damn Adam. It's all his fault. Well, it doesn't make any sense on any level. And particularly, it violates the principle of theism. It makes God seem unfair. Why should all living beings suffer for the very minor fault of one person? I mean, even if the whole of society for all time, everyone for all of the time to come should suffer because of one person's fault, that's not a very good idea, but they should have done something, you know, it should have been a mass murder. I guess there was no one to mass murder at the time. But it should have been something more spectacular than eating an apple. You can imagine, like, you know, Adam gets called before God and there's the sound of drums being... and God looking very angry and... you ate an apple! And because of that, all the human race will suffer for time immemorial because of this terrible sin. It would seem that God is, not very fair, not even very sane or very, very mentally balanced. In other words, it doesn't seem to make any sense whatsoever. And in fact, it doesn't make any sense. That's the point I'm making. So, the proper understanding is Purusha Sukha Dukha Nam Bhoktritve Hetu Ruchyate. As stated by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, every living being is responsible for his own suffering. Can't be blamed on someone else. Krishna bhuli se jivan adi bahirmuk ataiva maya tare deya samsara duk. Having forgotten Krishna since time immemorial, we are suffering from time immemorial in this material world. Krishna bahirmuk hoya bhogavan chakare nikatastha maya tare japatiya dhar. Becoming inimical to Krishna. That is our fault. And we desire sense gratification, separate from Krishna. And Maya catches us. So it's strange, the idea that Adam ate an apple and therefore the whole human society is suffering. It's strange, pointing out that it's very poor theology. And also the idea that God died for 3 days. It's not only very poor theology, it's practically, it's atheism. How can God die? That means God's under the laws of nature. Even if you say he came back from the dead, still that he died. And the idea that God has to suffer, this is, as Prabhupada said, when a priest said to Srila Prabhupada that our understanding is that God suffers for humanity, Prabhupada said, that's rascaldom. God never suffers. Why should God suffer? And to think that he suffered because we've done something wrong and therefore we have to get punished, but he takes the suffering and that cancels it out. That's the idea that there's a good power and a bad power, like God and Satan. And they're like rivals, and God's just a little bit ahead of Satan. But Satan's very powerful, so to cancel out the suffering, God had to suffer. He took the suffering on himself. But as Prabhupada said, that's rascalism. The very idea that God can suffer is simply rascalism. Why should people suffer for their sinful activities? So to say that the idea that Adam ate an apple or that Jesus or God died for our sins, that's strange. It is strange. And to say that Brahma is born from a lotus stem, that's also strange, but the strangeness of Christian theology, that is inherently, fundamentally strange, because it goes against the principles of theism or anything that might be called common sense or intelligent understanding. Whereas the strangeness of Brahma's being born from a lotus stem, that's just due to our... It's not really strange, it's due to our... a very limited perception and understanding. So there's a fundamental difference there. Okay, that's it. I spoke about that. Is there any question about this?
I have one question. Like, you were mentioning, I was not knowing about Adam because some people are having faith that because Adam ate apple, whole humanity is suffering.
Some people have faith that, well, that's standard Christian dogma. There are different Christian schools, but originally in Christianity, that was the dogma. That was what I was taught at school, in a Catholic school, in the Christian, what's it called, the Catholic Catechism. At the time, it was the Catholic Church is the biggest Christian church. I don't know what other Christian churches say. There are different Protestant churches and Orthodox churches and so many different churches, but that's the biggest church, and that's what they taught me. They may have changed because about 1963 or something, they had Vatican II, in which they changed their theology to a large extent to try to make it more in line with modern science. So, but that is, you could say, pristine Christian dogma. Pristine means old and best, or in this case, old and worst.
But my question is, Guru Maharaj, like Lakshmi Devi curses, just because she got angry on Bhrugu, she curses all Brahmanas. That story.
The story of Lakshmi cursing Bhrigu, that all Brahmanas will be poor. Well, that's based on a completely different understanding. Because the Christian understanding is that souls are born. Every time someone is born, a new soul is born. And they're not very clear about it, but that's, they're not very clear about anything. But is the soul the body? So, and they say we're all tainted by original sin, by something that we didn't do. So if Lakshmi curses the Brahmana class that they'll all be poor, that means that someone who earns by their activities, they get born into that class because of their activities. And actually it's not a curse. The curse is a benefit, because for a Brahmana to be poor, that's helpful for his transcendental realization. So it's a completely different... it's based on a completely different template, you could say.
And we hear of the appearance of Swayambhu.
In other words, it's not that because of that curse that people... they're affected by something for which they didn't do anything. The principle remains the same, that everyone gets what they deserve. That is not changed by Lakshmi's curse. And Lakshmi's curse, it's also something like Agni giving Krishna the Sudarshan Chakra, because the Sudarshan Chakra is anyway Krishna's weapon. And out of a leela, from the worldly perspective, Krishna receives that. So anyway, Brahmanas as a class, they're poor, and they're supposed to be. They're not supposed to be rich. They voluntarily accept poverty, real Brahmanas. So, it only appears like that, that she made it like that, but that's their inherent quality anyway. Yeah, what was that? Someone's going to ask something.
We hear the appearance of Swayambhu Manu and his wife, Shatrupa.
Yeah.
It's very similar to the appearance of Adam and Eve.
Like, yeah, it seems similar, yeah.
They just came from Brahma's body.
Well, they came from, yeah. So?
Like, is it like...
There are similarities, which when Christians came to India and they were first studying all these things, they thought that the Vedic stories had come from the Bible, because there's similar to Noah's Ark. There's the story of Matsya Avatar and the Satyavrata Muni who makes a boat because of the upcoming flood. But they dropped that theory when they understood that actually the Vedic culture far predates Christianity. So they had to drop that idea. And there are similar things which are the same. It may be that various stories have come from India and they've come in various ways. But as I was saying yesterday anyway, we don't have to take very seriously all the things in the Bible, because it's very poor theology. We don't have to preoccupy ourselves with it. Because this point was brought up again, and I myself wanted to speak on it, and the different kinds of strangeness. That's why I elaborated on it. Yeah. Speak loudly. Speak to Gaur Bhagavan, don't speak to me. Look over there and speak to him. He has to hear it. The mic has to hear it also.
Yeah. Aryan theory. Aryan theory is very...
What do you mean Aryan theory? Explain what you mean by Aryan theory.
I mean, some people came from somewhere to India.
The Aryan invasion theory, you mean?
Yeah, Aryan
invasion theory. Yeah, be more specific. That's well debunked now.
Yeah, that is debunked, but... Seventh Goswami book.
Yeah.
In that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also was...
In Krishna Sanghita, he presented information from Shastra, interpreting it in a way that at that time modern scholars might accept it. Before doing that, he said there are two ways to understand Shastra. One is the swan's way, and the other is the ass's way. So he said this is the ass's way for people. For people who are attached to the modern ideas, it's to show them. You see, the Bhagavatam already shows all these things. That's why he interpreted it like that, just to draw their attention to Bhagavatam. Not that Bhaktivinoda Thakur believed all these theories. That question often comes up, but I don't know. People, they don't read carefully enough. But he very clearly says there are two ways of understanding scripture. One is the swan's way and the other is the ass's way. And then you read the ass's way, and because you're an ass, you think that this is correct. It's meant for asses. Yeah.
Last time Gokul Chandrapa was here.
Speak to Gaur Bhagavan.
Last time Gokul Chandrapa was here, so he said that... in some Puranas, the story is coming of Dharma and his wife going naked in jungle, and they ate some apple, some fruit from a tree, and in that tree Gopal Bhattacharya said this Bible theory of this Adam and Eve looks like they have derived from this story.
It may be.
Like some rishi wanted to test Dharma and later he
did. It may be.
Adharma or something
like that. It may be. I don't know. And to tell you the truth, I'm not that much interested either, because it doesn't really affect us that much.